I... Okay, so there's a bigger audience than last week. Okay, I'll just introduce myself a little bit. My name's Lulu. I got sober on April 25th, 2018, and I'm forever grateful for that, and I actually mean that today. I grew up in Westfield. I grew up actually on a house in Lawrence right up the street from here, and I had a very average life. The only thing on average about me is that I just drank to no end, and that was pretty much it. I could never stop, and I always had to have a drink in my hand. And I went through, I had my first drink at the age of 13, 12-ish, and then I started smoking pot at 14, and then that was it. And I drank to no end. I just drank. I was the one that introduced drinking to friends. I was the one that if friends' parents had alcohol in their fridge, I was the kid that was like, let's just take some. I grew up with both parents in the room, so I never had the luxury of having alcohol in my house. So going to other people's houses was always like a dream for me. Fast forward, I was on a wild ride for 3 years of it, 4 years actually. And then when I was 16, I was sent to my first rehab. And that's when I was really introduced to the program on my own terms, not what I just grew up in my house knowing. So I went to rehab and I did the whole, 90 and 90, and I got a sponsor, and I was miserable because I was still in high school, and I was kicked out of my high school, so I was getting homeschooled for about like 6 months. And then I finally went to a private school where I, at that time, had about like 6 months of sobriety, and things were going good until things weren't going good, and I picked up a drink, and then I started it all over again. The only thing that, and I was sober for about a year, and I went to college. I lasted about 3 weeks in college, and then I picked up a drink, and then the rest was history. I, for the longest time, said, oh, I just had a relapse, and, that was that. But no, I had a full-blown run. I was 3 years in New York City, wild and out of control and disconnected from everyone I loved. I lost pretty much everything. Family, self-respect, like, jobs. So then, when I decided to get sober, this time around, I made sure that I did it right. And by doing it right, I did the steps. And I, like, was honest. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight, really. We talked about, kind of left off on the fourth step, but jumping into the fifth step, that shit's hard. When you're newly sober and you're vulnerable and you're scared and you're still, you're like the pink cloud, I feel like, still kind of, where things are just like, I'm not trying to like ruin it for anyone that has their pink cloud. Like, being sober is awesome, but there's gonna get a moment where like shit gets real, and then you're kind of just like, all right, like you need this book more than ever. And like I shared like last week, I never read a textbook. I never did any of my like readings that I had to do for school or anything. Like, I always was someone that like looked it up and tried to find answers online. This is probably the first book that I read, like, cover to cover multiple times, willingly. And so, I mean, I was terribly scared to do the steps. I was terribly scared to do the fifth step, because I had abandonment issues my whole life. I grew up in a family that loved me, adored me, but I was also adopted, and I had struggled with that my whole life, even though my family was like, we still love you the same. They did. But I always had that fear of someone leaving me when they knew how bad I was, because I always thought that I was a bad kid. So when it came down to get honest with someone, I was so terrified that I was just going to spill all this out, because this time I was really going to do it, you know. I was really going to be honest. I was really going to, you know, lay it all out there for someone. And I was terrified if I did that, that they would leave and that I'd be stuck all by myself with this book, not knowing what to do. Because that was just my, that's how, that was my fear, you know. So, I don't know, like, we can just, let's, there's something that my sponsor pointed out. I just want to, I know it's chapter 6, but I just want to see what page. Okay, yeah. So, on page, like, 74, it just, there's not really one paragraph or line that I like to look at. It's just the whole collective, like, page in itself. And I'm not going to bore everyone by reading that, because I have a very boring voice when I read. But, you know, this is about being open and honest with someone. And it's also about finding the right person to be open and honest with. And for some people, that's their sponsor. And for some people, that's, you know, like someone in their sponsorship family, or like a close friend in sobriety. There's one part here in the second paragraph at the bottom, is we have no right to save our own skin at another person's expense. I was mind blown by that. I didn't get that. I was someone who I thought that by, like, coming clean, you know, it was all about me. You know, it was about my right to share what I've done and my thought process and all that. And, you know, it was me, the whole process. You know, I didn't once think about how this could affect someone else. How if I'm telling someone, you know, I had a father, like, in the rooms, so sometimes I would share with him, like, oh yeah, like, this is what I'm doing. And I eventually was like, maybe that's a little hurtful, you know, to share, you know, that I was doing X and X because I was so mad at him. You know, I was 17 when I started driving. I was in sobriety for most of it. There was a part when I wasn't in sobriety, and I crashed about 4 cars in a 2-month span. And I always just would make jokes out of it, like, oh, you know, haha, I just can't drive, you know. And that's not really funny now, looking back, when you're, like, an adult and you realize that, like, it's $100 just, or no, it's $400 just to replace a windshield. How about, like, a whole side of the car? How about the garage hand, like, that just came off, like, the hinges? Like, you know, I was joking about me damaging my parents' property. And not having any, and that's, to me, like, if someone was joking about damaging, like, my apartment right now, I'm like, that's not funny. Like, I work hard to live here. Like, that's disrespectful. You know, I didn't see that. I didn't see any of my actions as disrespectful. I thought they were all just, you know, stories of the past, but they're going to be forgiven because I'm coming, like, to terms with it, and I'm being open and honest with someone else. So my sponsor at the time, she sensed that, and she called me out on it, and she's like, I think you just need to stop and realize, like, really look at what you're telling me, and you know, if, like, turn the tables, you know what I'm trying to say. And I did that, and that's not really a step in the book, but that's a step that I needed to take, because I was so young, and I was so wrapped up in my own life that I didn't see the pain that I caused other people. And so, you know, going through the, like, the steps with someone, like, that's why you do it with someone. Because there's certain things, I guess, in your delivery that you know, this person can call out and say, listen, like, this isn't exactly what you should be doing. Like, go back and redo it. When I sponsor women now, I try to kind of get a feel like where they are emotionally, mentally, spiritually, and then I send them like on their way to do this and come back to me, because there are some girls that I sponsor that like I feel like it's best if I'm there to them. Like, I need to sit next to them and explain it, because when I realized all the crappy shit that I was doing, I felt horrible. Like, years of emotions that were, like, I just ignored came back to me. And feeling that, and then also feeling terrified that this person might leave me because I'm being so honest. Like, I really thought that I was a horrible person. I thought that, like, I was disgusting. How could, like, my parents love me? How could, like, my sponsor want to work with me? Like, I'm a lost cause. Like, those were all the things, like, running through my mind. And I never want another alcoholic to feel like that, even though majority of times when we're doing this process, we might. So it's nice to have someone next to you saying, listen, like, you're not as horrible as you think. You're a shitty person, but we can fix being a shitty person. And that's, like, what I think happened with me. I was a shitty person. I'm still kind of shitty, but I'm not as shitty as I used to be. And, like, that's the truth, and I'm honest with myself about that. I'm honest with my sponsor about that, you know. So, just going down this, on the same paragraph, it's the next sentence. The rule is we must be hard on ourselves, but always be considerate of others. So, that's kind of what I'm saying, like, we are hard on ourselves. That's part of the process. But we're going to be considerate to others. Be considerate on yourself as well. Take care of yourself. These are vulnerable steps, you know. And I always am someone, I never put myself first. Never, ever, ever. I didn't care about my health. I didn't care about anything. All I cared about was just getting my next drink. And, you know, it took time and patience to learn to care for me, and that's something I value today so much, is that I care for myself, and I'm myself's number one advocate. And that's what you have to be, like, in this process, is your own self-advocate. So, I mean, that was really step 5 for me. And then, you know, of course, like, from there, like, honestly, I stopped after step 5. In the past, I always stopped after step 4. I was like a step 4 and like done kind of girl. Like, step 5, like, that was so emotionally draining for me. I didn't know like what else I could give to the program. So, and I'm not saying like once you're done with step 5, like, that's when like it clicks, because like it doesn't really click. And personally for me, it never just like clicked. It's just over time I start handling situations better, and that's, you know, how I realize, oh, it's working for me. But, you know, when you're, this is the work, you know, like step 4 or 5, like, that's work. Step 6, that's work, but that's work that you really have to do, in my opinion, with yourself. And that's being honest, like it's hard, this. And I don't want to say like it could be done in like a month. It can. I've seen people do it in months, like a month, and I'm like, that's impressive. For me, it took a while to go through my steps, and it was because I had so much fear, and I had a lot of, I want to say, like, precautions. Because I grew up in the rooms, so I knew the steps, and I knew what everyone expected of me, but I wasn't ready for that. You know, I wasn't ready to be, like, someone that raises their hand in the beginning of the meeting saying, yep, I finished my 12 steps, I can be a sponsor now. Like, I was not ready for that. That was the last thing I wanted, because I was like, I can barely still take care of myself. Like, I'm not dealing with another alcoholic. Like, no thank you. Like, peace out. It was just, like, it wasn't for me. And I was at a young people's meeting, and I shared something, and I don't even know, remember what it was or what the topic was, but this girl came up to me afterwards, and she goes, this is my second meeting, and I really identified what you said. Like, can you please sponsor me? And I, like, giggled, and it was so disrespectful, but I was so shocked that anyone was, like, identified to what I said, let alone, like, wanting me to, like, help them go through the steps. I just, like, thought she was kidding, and I, like, laughed, and she, like, was serious, and then, like, I looked and, like, saw her face where she was, like, mortified, and I was like, oh my god. I was like, I'm not there yet, but, like, here's my number. But it's, like, that was a moment for me where I realized that I guess I can do this, you know? And so after that meeting, called my sponsor, and I said, all right, like, I'm ready to, like, get back to work. And she's like, okay, great. Like, I'll see you tomorrow. Because towards this point, I needed to do the steps with someone next to me, no matter what they were. And it's just where I was in that time in my life. I was going through so many changes, and I just needed consistency. And the consistency was meeting with my sponsor and having this big book in my hand. So that's pretty much, you know, like, what we did. And I was happy. And, like, that was, I think this was, like, kind of the first time when I started to do step six that I found myself to be happy in the program. Not just happy that I didn't die or happy that, you know, I got my job back. Like, I was actually just happy with, like, life itself. And, like, that, to me, is just when things, like, started to click. I don't know. But, so then step seven is, you know, I told you how I feel about God, so humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. So I broke this down again. I was raised a cashew, so Christian Jew. So I had, like, you know, Christmas, but then I also had a bat mitzvah, and it was, you know, all this stuff back and forth, and I was so confused about God, and then, you know, my parents didn't really talk about it, but, like, they always, like, my dad and mom were in the program, so I was just so confused. So coming in, I had to find my own higher power, and that was my own God, and I, you know, like, that's Him, you know. And so when I had to humbly ask Him to remove my shortcomings, I was like, okay, cool, like, you know, this is my moment to have all the horrible things that have ever happened to me and all the horrible things that I've done removed. That's how I thought about it. And so my sponsor and I were talking about it, and she's just like, all right, like, you know, like, let's say a prayer. And I was like, okay, like, let's do it. And she was just like, you seem a little eager on this step. And I was, because I, from what I was believing was that, you know, shortcomings that were going to be removed, to say, were the past mistakes that I've made. And that's not the truth. The stuff that I've done in the past that were on, you know, my inventory, and that, you know, that I came clean about to my sponsor, that wasn't going to be removed. I was going to I'm going to carry that with me forever. But the pain and the, I guess, the fears and the self-esteem issues that I carried from that, those were going to be removed. And I had to take time to become okay with just that. And I had to take time to believe that that was possible, that that was going to be removed. And that was extremely difficult for me to understand, just because I didn't understand why God would take this away and this away, but not the whole image. And I had a very, like, open and honest conversation with my sponsor about it. And I just said, I don't get it. I was like, I don't want to remember, you know, I don't want to feel like a bad person anymore. And she kept telling me, you're not going to feel like a bad person because you aren't a bad person. And it's tremendously scary being told all this while you're still developing as a young adult. So I was terrified because I just didn't understand myself yet. I didn't know who I was in the world yet. And then I also didn't understand why I was going through this at this time in my life. I always knew that I was an alcoholic. I always knew that I was going to end up in these rooms, but it kept coming back to that one moment where I was in the hospital looking like I wasn't going to be leaving the hospital alive. And I was just like, why could, and the way I thought about it was, why couldn't that happen in 5 years? Because I knew that I was going to make it out alive, but I just, in my sick head, I was like, why can't I be going through this in 5 years? Let me have 5 more years of fun, you know? And that's what I had to pray to God about. I had to pray to God saying, I'm ready for you to take these shortcomings, and I'm ready for you to take these so-called 5 more years of fun that I was holding on for. And that's really hard when, all your friends are about to be graduating and they're having graduation parties and they're, going out to the bars and clubs and whatnot and having, my first year of sobriety, I didn't go to, that's actually not a lie. So I was 30 days sober, and the way I celebrated it was going to a club alone in New York City. But after that, I realized how horrible I felt. Literally, I'm at a table at a club downtown with my promoter, and I'm saying, just get me Red Bull for the whole night. I'll be fine. I'm sober now. Thinking that was okay. I was miserable. But that was me still trying to hold on to those 5 more years. After that night, I let go of that, and I, really have not gone back to a club since, unless it was for a birthday or really just a birthday. You have to drag me there. But it was so hard for me to say that, this program was going to be the rest of my life. Because I didn't even know what the rest of my life was going to be. I was just graduating, just about to get a job, and that was where I was in my life at that time. So again, I had to make this big book work for me in my life, and that's not traditional, and I understand that, but that was just how it worked for me. I had to mold this book to fit into my life, and that was just, I had to pray to God all the time, nonstop. I never prayed, and I never got the whole get on your knees and pray thing. It's just something I didn't do. And so when I got to a place where I was actually doing it, that's how I knew that I needed this program. Because I was scared at the fact that I was believing in this program. That scared me. I felt that I lost a piece of myself again. Because I wasn't someone that ever prayed. And I wasn't someone that ever did anything religiously unless it was, drinking or whatnot. So me getting up every day, praying to God and calling my sponsor and going to meetings, that was extremely scary for me. Because at this time, I was about 22, and that was my life. I wanted to throw up just thinking. I still wanted to throw up just thinking about it. So again, I had to, be all right, I'm okay with going to meetings, I'm okay with praying, I'm okay with calling my sponsor, but, we need to do something else to make this more like me. So I, found, my group of girls, I found a new group of girls, and then I found, sober events to go to, and, let me say, sober, parties are insane, they don't get tired, they go, like, I don't get it. Like, I'm someone now that's like 10 o'clock comes around, like, all right, I'm ready for bed. Like, it's like 3 a.m. and like we're in AC, like still partying in a hotel room. And I'm like, don't you people want to go to bed? Like, there's no drugs in your system and you're not drunk. Like, why are you still up? It made no sense to me. But like, that's just like how they are. And, you know, that was a good spot in my sobriety to be at that time. And then once again, you know, I got comfortable in my sobriety and then I did the next step. So that was step 8. And, like, no thank you. I did not want to do that at all. I was like, I remember, like, you know, you hear the steps at the beginning of a meeting, and you're like, yep, okay. And then, like, you're about to do it, and, you know, you have your list, and I'm looking it over, and I'm, you know, by this time has passed, so I go back on my phone, I go back to, like, Facebook, and I, like, go through my friends list, then I, like, add some people I might have harmed in the meantime, and I was terrified. So now it's like I had to be vulnerable with myself, which is not like something I ever did before. Be vulnerable with another alcoholic, my sponsor. Like, that was, you know, to this day, she's never left me, and I love her to death for that. And I don't think she could ever will, because I text her and call her way too much. But, like, now I have to go up to random people that aren't in this program and, like, you know, like, complain to them. Like, no way. Because someone in this program, like, they get it. It's part of the, progress. Like, they're not going to, like, attack me. I literally had nightmares of, like, getting punched, getting attacked. It was horrible. And a lot of it was around people from my hometown. So, of course, I had to, like, come back to Westfield, and, you know, like, I literally had, like, standing appointments at Starbucks where I would just be like, hey, I'm at Starbucks from this hour and this hour, like, on this day, like, do you want to meet? Like, and, you know, I was able to, well, like, I was able to make my, like, amends, but it wasn't easy, and there were a few amends that I couldn't make. And those were the hardest amends. You know, you can't make all your amends. And some amends, you know, you can't make because they passed away, or it's just not good for you or them. And some amends, like, people just don't care to answer you. And I had to learn that the hard way. So I had a really hard amends I had to make. And it was, the whole process of that amends was really hard for me, because I didn't think that I did anything wrong, but I knew that someone was hurt by my actions. So, my sponsor and I were talking about it, and I was like, yeah, but I don't really think I'm going to make amends to her, because we don't talk anymore, and I don't really think I did anything wrong, but all I know is that she's upset, but she wouldn't tell me why she's upset. And she goes, well, is she upset by you? And I go, well, yeah, it's something I did, but I don't know what I did. And she goes, but you did something. And I go, yeah, but she won't tell me what I did. So I still was flipping it back on someone else. And finally, I got tired of us going back and forth. So I was just like, yep, I know, I have to make amends to her. So I sent her a text, and it said red right away. And she just didn't answer. And I lost it. Like, I got so mad. I was, like, furious. Because I thought this person was blocking me on my, like, journey. Which was not the case at all. She probably, like, made my journey better, because I learned that I can't, you know, control, like, I literally, you know, like, something I, the first thing I identified in this book was, you know, being the director and having to control everything. So the fact that I couldn't control this amends, like, pissed me off to my core, but it was the best thing, you know, to happen to me. And this was someone that I grew up with and I was extremely close with, but we just had a falling out, and that was that. And I never got to make my amends. But, you know, as the years went on in my sobriety, it would still always bother me. So about, I want to say a year ago, I, like, wrote a letter to her. And I never mailed it. I just wrote a letter to her saying, like, this is what I would have said in our amends. Closed the envelope, put it in my, like, closet, I think. And that was that. And to this day, like, I feel at peace with that. I can't control, you know, someone not wanting to hear me out. They don't have to hear me out, you know. I did horrible things to a lot of people. I would steal from people. I would lie to people. I would cheat on people. I would, you know, manipulate, and the list goes on and on. But, you know, and my some of my amends were still ongoing as I was still going on, you know, through other steps. You know, I still make amends to this day with people just because I might not see them for a while or whatnot. There was an amends I made, like, I think on Christmas, because my friend's brother was visiting. It's the first time that he was in the state in, like, probably years, actually. And I was like, yeah, I have to make an amends to him. Can you, like, let me know when he's home? And I'm like, I stole money from him. And I stole money from, like, the mom and everything. And I felt horrible, you know. I was like, oh, like... And I was like, I'm so sorry. And she goes, oh, honey, I knew. She's like, I would leave it there. Like, I was like, oh. Like, you're so kind. Like, thank you. Like, you know, there was a lot of things like that. Like, where people were just like, I knew you had, like, stuff going on. And that made me question, like, my, like, active addiction. You know, like... Because I really thought that I was, like, sneaky. Like, I didn't think anyone knew. I thought I hit it really well. But a lot of people knew at the end. Had no idea. But, you know, that's what it is. Like, addiction is so powerful that it distorts the way that we see ourselves and other people. And that was just so hard for me to understand because... I'm making my amends, and I wasn't feeling better, but I was just feeling, like, at peace. You know, it wasn't, I didn't get any, like, warmth in my heart from it. I just was like, all right, this is the right thing I have to do. It sucks, but it is what it is. And a lot of my amends, I was really scared to make just because I didn't know how people would react, and I didn't. And I was honestly, like, when my sponsor said I had to make amends to certain people, I was like, well, do I have to give them their money back? And she was like, she's like, well, do you think you need to? And I was just like, well, not really. And, like, we worked on that, and that was, you know. But, like, that was, like, where I was still, you know, because, you know, I looked the same my whole life. Like, I've had the same face and the same hair and, like, the same, like, pretty much, you know, everything. So people, like, recognized me still. Like, I never, like, looked, like, crazy, I would say. And so, like, I would try and avoid Westfield whenever I could, because it's not like I left the town on a good note. Like, I was, like, literally, like, kicked out of the high school, and then, like, the cheerleader that, like, dropped girls, like...
Can I say that?
Should I
edit
that out?
Yeah, can you?
You said it last week, too, though.
I did? Oh, okay. Well, then it's too late. It's okay. Oh, well. But, you know, like... I had this distorted reality that, like, I was still this, like, picture-perfect Girl Scout. And it was far from the truth. And so, like, you know, making these amends to people. Like, I did a freaking tour. Like, I was in Westfield, and then I was in New York, and then I was in LBI, and, like, all my stomping grounds, like, I had to cover. And that was hard, because I was like, oh, like, you know, I'm seeing people my age enjoying their life, and I'm here, like, on a mission to, like, apologize to these people, pretty much, and make amends, and, you know, peace out. I didn't get to have, like, a celebration. Like, I thought, like, you know, like, all right, like, I did it. Like, go me. Like, let's have a party. But no, like, I wanted to still have a party after everything. And I'm still like that. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's just who I am. I like to celebrate everything. It's just nowadays my partying is different. Like, it's kind of just a little, like, 1-2 dance. And then, like, I move on with my life, you know? So, you know, that was my experience with my amends. But, like, I don't really know where else I could say that amends, like, for me, it's not something I just did that once, like I said. It's, you know, I continually do it. And it's gotten better to the fact where it's, like, I'm not scared to do it. The hardest amends I had to make was to my younger brother. And I was so scared because my brother doesn't show emotion, but I know he has emotion. So I was scared that he wasn't going to show emotion, but then he was going to leave and be in pain. And I didn't want that for him at all. I was like, I'd rather just take all the pain for him. And, like, so I made my amends to my brother. And I just said, I was like, at the end, I was just like, I love you unconditionally. Like, whatever you're feeling, just let me know. If you don't want to say anything, that's fine. But, like, I'm here. And he just hugged me for, like, 3 minutes. And I was just like, this is the best. Like, think, like, I was so scared, you know. I had fears of getting punched by people. I never got punched. I got yelled at and cursed at, whatever, like, that's nothing new, I could handle that. I did get asked if I was going to pay someone back, and I just said no, because I wasn't going to pay them back. And then I did get asked if I would, you know, I got asked, like, the craziest things, you know, over, like, during my amends. And, you know, a lot of it turned around to people asking about my sobriety. They're like, so what's it like, you know, going to those meetings? Like, it was always those meetings or, like, those people. Like, do you have stuff in common with them? And I go, yeah, I have pretty much, like, everything in common with them. And people didn't get it. They're like, why? They're, like, older than you. And I go, yeah, but, like, we have everything in common. And they just didn't get that. And I was just, you know, I would be going to diners after meetings, and I'd be having the time of my life, you know. And I'd be in meetings identifying with people that had a different walk of life from me, but, you know, I still understood what you were saying, and I still related to it, and I still took something from that meeting. And that's something that really just started happening once I did the work, you know. And doing the work in the program is the hardest and scariest part, but it's the most rewarding. And there's no perfect way to do it. I think it's just doing it on your own terms and in a way that you're comfortable with. And that's something that I found, because, you know, like, I've been in this program since I was 16 years old, and it's taken me multiple tries to get this right. And I never knew I wanted to be in this program until it was almost an option for me to not ever be in this program again. And with that, I mean, that's what I wake up to every day, you know. I have the option to be in this, like, program. I have the option to show up for another alcoholic. I've, like, you know, there are times where I don't want to do the work that's required. And that's not okay. I'm just being lazy. because I'm, like, happy and, like, things are good and, like, you know, like, I have nothing to complain about. Like, I don't know, like, my windshield was cracked on my car for, like, 3 months and it just got bigger and bigger. I was complaining about that. Like, that is not a problem compared to, like, what I used to deal with. I used to get fired from a job every week. Like, I used to, like, do the craziest stuff and, you know, I never would have gotten to this place in my program unless it was because I was, like, you know, vulnerable and honest with another alcoholic and vulnerable and honest with myself. And, you know, that's all that happened from, like, doing the work. So, yeah. Thank you. Yeah.